Well, regular listeners to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast and fans of ours will know that we are big in the way of the mashup. And I'm sitting here right now having lunch with one of the creators of the graphic novel comic book Kill Shakespeare. And I'm kind of having a nerdgasm. Connor McCreary, thank you for talking to me.
You're very welcome. I'm great to be here with the Reduced Shakespearean Nights. You're much taller than I thought.
Thank you. Less reduced.
Yeah. I thought that was actually a literal term. I'm starting to realize that maybe I've misunderstood this entire Reduced Shakespeare term.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 345, To Kill Shakespeare.
Well, and misunderstanding the concept, I mean, that's probably a good place to start, right? People see the title, Kill Shakespeare, on a graphic novel, and they go, wait a second, what does this mean? I know you've been asked this a million times, but can you tell me the reduced version of the origin of Kill Shakespeare and the comic book, the graphic novel, and the title?
Yes.
Good, that'll be great. Thanks so much for coming.
You're welcome. Actually, it's funny. We do get a bit of the... You see when we go to conventions and people will walk by and you can see the ones who are looking at the Kill Shakespeare signage with sort of ever-narrowing eyes, and you can sort of see the rage build up. So we had to eventually create our own little phrase, which was, you know, we come to praise the bard, not to bury him.
Right.
And that normally will get a little flash of recognition and then they're willing to stop the lynch mob. Kill Shakespeare, it's an action-adventure story. Takes all of Shakespeare's greatest heroes, most menacing villains, puts them in the same world, and pits them against each other in a quest to either save or kill a mysterious wizard by the name of, wait for it, William Shakespeare.
William Shakespeare is a wizard in this world with all of his characters.
Yes, that's kind of our conceit. Well, I suppose, though, it depends on which side of our little Shakespearean line you're on, because half the characters believe that all tragedy was caused by this evil wizard, William Shakespeare.
Right.
And he has sort of written their lives to be misery.
Yeah.
The other half of the characters, they don't believe in this. They believe the fault lies in themselves, not in the stars.
Right.
And they claim that, you know, the reason there's not paradise in the land is because they need to do something to earn their father's affection. And so into this sort of strange, sort of Shakespearean, almost holy war, comes Hamlet. We take him from the part of the play where he leaves Denmark, but instead of the pirates sort of attacking, and then in one of my favorite great Shakespearean moments where he's just like, you know what, you can fill it in. You know, they've got the crown prince of a major European nation in their hands,
right,
and they just kind of swing by and drop him off.
Yeah.
I figure he was like, oh, you hate your uncle? I hate my uncle too. So that's our jumping off point. So in that black area of the play, the dark area of the play, right, this is where in our world Hamlet gets attacked by pirates, knocked overboard, and ends up washed ashore in this strange Shakespearean land where Richard III and Lady Macbeth send him on this quest to end all tragedy and get his father back from the dead by killing this wizard, William Shakespeare. But of course, as he goes, Hamlet's going to find this sort of other group of characters who are opposing Richard, believe that Shakespeare is the creator, are telling Hamlet that his true destiny is to trigger the second coming. It's very much a to kill or not to kill kind of proposition for our melancholy Dane.
Well, what I was so taken from it the minute I heard about it, because it seems like an idea that I'm amazed that nobody's done before, to put Shakespeare's characters into a quest. Was the idea always that it would be a comic book? Did you have this idea of I want to do something with Shakespeare's characters, or I want to do something in the graphic novel, or how did that all come about?
Well, it's written by myself and a guy named Anthony Delcal, a friend of mine. We're both from Toronto.
But you're the brains of the outfit.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Obviously.
I mean, look at it. My head is my brain pan is bulging out of my forehead. There's so much knowledge. No, we like to joke that Anthony started off kind of more as a Shakespeare geek, and I was probably a bit more of the comics geek. His big sister, little sister, actually. I always think of her as the big sister because she's the smarter one as well. He's always the second smartest in every relationship. It's very, it's very Shakespearean that way.
Yes.
So his sister was a huge English Lit fan. And so that's where sort of he got his love for the classics. And both of us growing up in Ontario means you get to go to the Stratford Festival. So we both had early experiences with Shakespeare, seeing it on stage, which I think makes all the difference when you're younger in terms of whether you're going to become someone who ends up really appreciating Shakespeare or not. Right. Because, you know, until I saw Shakespeare, I mean, I liked it. I loved to read when I was a kid.
Right.
But seeing it made it come alive.
So, well, and you see it, you become familiar with it, and you're not at all intimidated by it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, yeah. At least you get the fact that Shakespeare is smutty and filled with violence, I mean, which doesn't leap off the page. I mean, I'm sure Shakespeare would be mildly horrified to think that the way most of us encounter his work is through reading it, which is not the intent.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, so for us, but the idea came, you know, Anthony and I were joking about video games. We were actually working on video game ideas at the time. We'd done a couple of kids' TV shows in Canada that had been optioned but not made. Mm-hmm. And Anthony made this crack about Kill Bill, which was out at the time, and said, what if it was a different Bill? What if it was Billy Shakespeare?
Ooh.
And we sort of laughed. We said, oh, yeah, you'd have, you know, Romeo and Hamlet on one side and Richard III and Iago would be on another side. And then we sort of stopped and said, you know, that's not actually the worst idea. You know, and then it just kind of became a what-if game. What if Juliet lived? Who would she be? You know, what if Hamlet doesn't get back to Denmark? Is he bloody-minded by nature? You know, is Hamlet a tragedy because Hamlet is in it? Or could something different happen for him? And that's sort of, I think, where the thought experiment part of this came. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a kid, I loved nerdy D&D, fantasy, adventure, sword and sorcery, and that's why Kill Shakespeare's got a lot of Lord of the Rings, Game of Thrones DNA, because of my days rolling 20-sided dice.
But that's one of the fascinating things, I think, about the story that you've come up with as well, is that all of the characters seem very, very plausible extensions or, I guess, further developments of the Shakespearean characters that you know that we know from the plays. And I love what you've done with Juliet. You know, you've extended what happens if she lives, but you've also transformed her in a way that's very cool and hip. And do I want to give it away?
Well, I mean, we'll give it away a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah, you gotta put a little take a little bit of the bacon off the pig before you're gonna come in and buy the pork chops. That's a Canadian metaphor. You may not be familiar with it in the States or anywhere. But no, so I mean, Juliet, in our world, we've sort of, it's about 10 years since the ordeal with Romeo. Juliet survived. Romeo did not. Juliet has sort of become this, almost like a Joan of Arc type character. And we always looked at that in, you know, she tried love and it didn't work. That she's not going to go down that path again and be the lovesick girl she once was. But at the same token, when you look at the balcony scene, and I remember having a teacher sort of break this down for me, you know, it's all about Juliet telling Romeo, all right, I know about this Rosalind chick. How serious are you really? And Romeo doesn't get up that balcony until Juliet's satisfied that Romeo's really not just about a booty call.
Right.
And so, I mean, from there, she's so often cast as this lovelorn, very weak character, but she's actually much smarter and much more of an active character, I'd argue, than Romeo, mm-hmm. who is very reactive through most of the play. So for us, it was a natural extension. She's to us what Princess Leia would be if you wrote Princess Leia now. Because Princess Leia is another strong female character, but then the second and third Star Wars movies, she kind of disappears. So, you know, Juliet is equally a love letter to Princess Leia as she is to Juliet, as traditionally seen.
I'm Peter Holland. I'm the McNeil Family Professor in Shakespeare Studies at the University of Notre Dame, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Where can you RSE the RSE? We'll be killing Shakespeare in our own way this week when we return to London and the Leicester Square Theatre tomorrow night for 4 weeks, performing the complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged, revised. Then next month in August, we'll be bringing the Bible, the complete Word of God, abridged, to Australia for 6 weeks. And this fall, bringing Shakespeare books, Christmas, and the new show, The Complete History of Comedy, abridged, to the US, UK, Singapore, Hong Kong, and Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. As always, the very best way to stay up to date about all of our worldwide performance dates is to sign up for the Reduced Reader, our email newsletter. Go to ReducedShakespeare.com and click on the link to subscribe and check out our touring page for specific box office, venue, and ticket information. And now back to my conversation with Connor McCreary. I asked him about another aspect of Kill Shakespeare that I so admire, which is not only its incredible fidelity to Shakespeare's characters, but to his language.
Talk to me a little bit about the language that you guys have used, because sometimes we will quote Bill shakes pretty directly, but most of the time, 95% of the time, you've written your own stuff, and it's very convincing and compelling and seems authentically Shakespearean without being slavish to iambic pentameter.
One of the big things we wanted to do with Kill Shakespeare is we wanted to kind of peel back this veil that Shakespeare is only for the intellectual elites. This notion that Shakespeare is, you know, you must be this intelligent to read Shakespeare, which is a load of crap, right? I mean, and Shakespeare wrote for everybody. Yeah. Shakespeare, if he was working today, he would be Steven Spielberg or James Cameron, you know, at the height of their creative powers, you know, of their popular appeal with the thinking man, you know, side that Stanley Kubrick brings.
Right.
You know, and I mean, and there's a reason he's influenced all these people. So, I mean, one of the reasons we use the comics medium as well, because that is considered low culture. So we wanted to take what is ultimately considered the highest of high culture and put it in a low culture medium and show that both of those thoughts are kind of crap.
Right.
But no, I mean, the language, we wanted to make it accessible. We wanted to make it fun. We did not want the kind of person who had stayed away from Shakespeare for most of their life because, you know, it's all but literally a foreign language for us now to see, oh, there's iambic pentameter. I'm not going to understand this. I'm not going to enjoy it. You know, and our style is kind of Thor-style English in some ways, I suppose. There's some right. these and some thous, and they're misused occasionally. We now actually thankfully have a scholar or two who will come in and say, wherefore art thou does not literally mean where are you. It means who are you.
Right.
So now we actually misuse wherefore art thou and kill Shakespeare. So we say that we did that on purpose
yes.
as a nod to how people generally see. I mean, it's very meta.
I think that's very smart. Well done. Well
it's
done.
Very meta. You may not get it, but we get it. You're just not smart enough for that. But yeah, no, we wanted to make it accessible. I'm glad you enjoy the fact that we tried to still make our language poetic.
Yeah.
You know, we wanted it to feel like it could be of the time. So I'm glad that you actually say that it does have that. I mean, there are definitely a few phrases we're really proud of. We think that, you know, Will, being the witty thief that he was, would have stolen. But most of the time, yeah, we're just ripping off Shakey with the best. And, you know, and we do it for three different ways. We either want to take a line and repurpose it,
right.
give it to a different character. So, I mean, I Am Fortune's Fool shows up, yeah. you know, but it's given to Hamlet.
Right.
And it's him reflecting on the murder of Polonius. So
right.
for us, if you're a big Shakespeare nerd, you'd say, oh, hey, thematically, that line is used the same way. And if you know nothing about Shakespeare, I Am Fortune's Fool is one of those universal phrases that you didn't realize was Shakespeare, but you knew.
Yeah.
So that we tried to cherry pick those phrases so that for someone who is unfamiliar with the bard, a lot of the Shakespeare we use is either invisible to them or it's a big slap across their face and they're like, I know that line. And either they know where they know it from, but if they don't, that's fine because they get to feel like, ha, I do know that line. Awesome.
And it strikes me that Shakespeare scholars would really like this because what's so much fun about the books and the stories is that you are, as you said, you're investigating these characters and really examining their motivations and then what would their motivations be if they were into this other world. And that just seems enormous fun, talking about the characters as if they're real.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons this idea, I mean, it was funny because you asked earlier about, you know, nobody having done this. And there are a couple of plays that I always get this wrong, Good Morning Desdemona, Good Night Juliet, or vice versa,
okay.
which is by a Canadian playwright, I want to say it's Anne-Marie MacFarlane, but I mean, Anne-Marie MacDonald, I think, which involves a woman falling into both Othello and Romeo and Juliet and encountering Juliet and Desdemona. It's really neat stuff. But that's played very seriously.
Right.
I think, you know, we're part of the mashup generation, Anthony and I.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, again, I think it's because I grew up in the Marvel Comics world. I grew up where all the superheroes occasionally came into the same world, and there was Wolverine, and there was Iron Man, and it was so amazing.
Cool.
And so, yeah, it's like, I mean, Hamlet's amazing. Othello's cool. You know what's even cooler? It's those guys together. So I think people appreciate that. I think maybe once we opened that door a little bit, it became very obvious for everyone that how much fun it is and how much it makes sense. And yeah, and for us, I mean, what we really wanted to do is it's not by accident that we take most of our characters either after they died. I mean, there's a reason we use a lot of the tragic characters.
Right.
It's because it gave us natural jumping off points to say this is how the world could be different. From the comedies, there aren't as many. You kind of have to, you know, we're thinking of doing something with Beatrice and Benedict in the future, and that's going to be something probably set like 10 years after their play. But it's not as neat a space as Juliet didn't die.
So, all right, so you're talking about Beatrice and Benedict. You have plans for this series. It's not stopping here. It's continuing, yes?
Oh, there are plans. So right now there are two graphic novels out. One's called The Sea of Troubles. The other's called Blast of War, and those two books together kind of tell this tale of the quest for Shakespeare. Right. Does he exist? Evil wizard, benevolent creator, something else entirely. Right now, for those of your listeners who are also comic geeks, the single issues of a new series called The Tide of Blood, which takes a couple of the surviving characters, this is Shakespeare after all, not everybody lives, and brings them to the island from the Tempest. And, you know, because I love fantasy adventure, the beginning of the second book, there's the prophecy, the unifying prophecy. And, you know, I love those type of prophecies that come in and out, and you're never quite sure what they mean, and are you triggering them properly, or have you just done something that's going to change everything else? People are a little late in the game. You can hear us they're actually cheering on William Shakespeare's most recent birthday.
That's so nice. It was last month, but still, I'm so glad.
Well, he was doing a big tour. It took him a while to get here to Chicago. He apparently started in England.
Whatever. We don't even know what his birthday is anyway. Yeah. We know his death day, but not really his birthday. So, and there's been a stage version of Kill Shakespeare. Did you guys write that?
Yeah, we did, actually. We got Anthony and I, we wrote it. We were commissioned by Soulpepper Theatre, which is out in Toronto, which is one of the real good Shakespearean theatres in Canada. And they took all of Andy Belanger, our interior artist, all his images, and what we do is we project them on a screen, and then the actors actually perform as if it was a radio play. So you're seeing them, they make their own foley, they do their own live music. You know, we wanted to make it sort of almost cabaret style, and actually it played in Chicago recently with the Straw Dog Theater, and they actually, what they did is they actually had, I think it was 9 or 10 different big screens, and they moved the images around as if it was a comic book. The woman who put it together was a big fan of comics, so she moves it, the images around as if you were going through a very interestingly laid out page, and the actors were actually not on stage. They were all hiding behind the audience, so you were being drawn into to Andy's art. And it's been fantastic. It's been in Dubai, it's been in Rochester, Montreal, Tucson, Seattle, pretty much anywhere there's a Comic-Con or a Shakespeare festival, we take it out there, and then it goes for a little run in the neighborhood.
Well, and you mentioned, you know, Kill Shakespeare is drawn from Tarantino's Kill Bill, and you mentioned Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings. Will there be a Kill Shakespeare movie?
We've been approached to do film and TV. We've been really lucky that Hollywood is really looking at graphic novels right now, so it was inevitable that somebody was going to find us. Right. But we've actually been approached by a bunch of very interesting people. We're working on a screenplay right now. In Canada, we're very lucky that you kind of have a cultural industry that sort of supports you through these things. But we're also kind of curious. I mean, the notion of TV is interesting. Maybe the notion of doing TV and then a film, or vice versa. But we would love to be able to use a broader medium to kind of take our story out. I mean, it'll be different because comics are comics and other mediums are other mediums. But yeah, we'd love to. It would be great. What are two things you rarely talk about at parties? Your favorite Shakespeare character and your favorite superhero. You know, and you know, I wrote an essay actually for a book called Living with Shakespeare, where I talked about how Shakespeare and comics are close kissing cousins.
Yeah.
High drama, colorful costumes, you know.
Inflated language.
Who else knows the word nemesis but Shakespeare geeks and comic fans, at the age of 9. So,
exactly.
Yeah, they're very similar. They're close kissing cousins. They're a lot of fun, and it's just nice. We're really glad that we have a lot of comics fans who've now told us they picked up a Shakespeare play for the first time in decades, but we're equally proud that we've got Shakespeare nuts who've emailed us and said, what else is in comics? Because I never thought I'd read a story like this. Is there anything else like this? So, yeah, we love that.
That's it for this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast. Send us your Shakespearean mashups via email to feedback@reducedshakespeare.com. You can also post comments on many of our website pages, and you can post reviews on iTunes. You can interact with other fans at our website and our Reduced Shakespeare Company Facebook fan page. You can also become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit. Follow us on Twitter @Reduced. You can find easy links to all these social networks at our website, reducedshakespeare.com. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, comic book guy Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Claire Davidson. No reason, it's just random. Special thanks to fellow Kill Shakespeare fan Professor Peter Holland from the University of Notre Dame. And thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 345 1035th of the Reduced Shakespeare Company.
This podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reducedshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.
So much less. So much less. So much less.